Law 12. Cautions, Questions, and Answers. Questions and Answers. Question 1. What is the difference between a yellow card and a red card? Answer 1. Yellow card, offenses concern minor acts that are committed against the spirit of the game, such as unsporting behavior, formerly known as ungentlemanly conduct. Unsporting behavior can cover just about anything. When players show a disregard for fair sporting play, such as tackles that are not extremely violent or over-aggressive, but mistimed or reckless, acts that warrant a yellow card are usually due to the passionate and the physical contact elements of the game, and thankfully, rarely result in serious injury to an opponent. The yellow card is also a final warning to players that if they step out of line again, they may receive a second yellow card, leading to a sending off. The yellow card is a powerful tool in the referee's armory. It is a method that the referee can use to control the game and to properly punish and warn perpetrators. Persistent infringement is another example of a yellow card infringement due to a culmination of minor fouls, despite warnings being given beforehand to players by the referee. The other yellow card offenses are listed at the top of this page. A player who has received one yellow card can remain on the field of play and continue with the game. Red card offenses are major infringements committed blatantly against the spirit and game and the spirit of the laws. They are acts that are purposefully committed. This type of behavior has nothing to do with the game itself and is generally committed in the heat of the moment when a player has failed to control himself or his emotions for whatever reason. The red card is the ultimate punishment for those players who cannot behave themselves properly and who cannot control their tempers or frustrations. Preventing a goal-scoring opportunity is also a red card offense that warrants a sending off for the perpetrator. A red card means an instant dismissal from the field of play for the offender and can be due to a single act or a second yellow card offense committed in the same game. After the game has commenced, a player sent from the field of play may not be replaced, i.e. that team must continue the remainder of the match with one less player. Question 2. Who invented the yellow and red cards? Answer 2. It was England's Ken Aston, referee of the infamous Battle of Santiago in the 1962 World Cup Finals, who went on to dream up red and yellow cards. He later became chairman of the FIFA Referees Committee and introduced red and yellow cards to the game. Sadly, Ken died at the age of 86 on the 23rd of October, 2001. May he rest in peace. Quote from Ken Aston: "As I drove down Kensington High Street, London, the traffic light turned red. I thought, yellow, take it easy. Red, stop, you're off." Red and yellow cards were introduced to the game at the World Cup Finals in 1970. Question 3. A defender commits a deliberate foul to try to stop an attack, but the referee allows play to carry on by shouting "advantage, play on." The game continues for some time before the ball eventually goes out of play. The referee then shows the defender a yellow card for the foul that occurred earlier. Should the referee have waited so long, or should he have stopped play to caution the defender immediately or very shortly after the foul occurred? Answer 3. To allow the game to flow, the referee had applied the advantage law of giving the attacking team an advantage. Had he stopped the game immediately the foul had occurred, the advantage to the attacking team would have been lost. The referee was well within the laws to allow play to continue. This often happens when a cautionable offense and an advantage occur together. An astute referee will allow any advantage and then wait for the ball to go out of play before administering the caution. There is a slight danger for the referee when he takes this action, because a second act of misconduct might be committed by the same player in the interim period. It may cause some confusion if you have too many yellow cards queued up, which results in the perpetrator receiving two instant yellow cards leading to a sending off. If the original foul warranted a red card, then the referee should usually stop play immediately, irrespective of any advantage. If you do not stop play immediately, you may find that the opposition may have already punished the perpetrator behind your back. Question 4. A two-day tournament is being held where the teams are more competitive than my team have experienced in the past. My players are not accustomed to the physical play, and I'm afraid they might get hurt or retaliate against opponents, leading to cards being issued by the referee. My players are normally well-behaved in their own league. I would like my players to reach the qualifying stages of the tournament, so I cannot afford to have players disqualified from tomorrow's games. Help. Answer 4. Football is very combative and is played between teams of differing abilities and skills. Such skills, experience and standing can sometimes generate a false confidence. How many times have you seen the underdogs win a game of football? Many times. This is what makes football the exciting world game that it is. Different teams, leagues, standards, ethnic groups, geographical regions, and referees of all levels all have different expectations of how much physical play is deemed normal. At World Cup standard level, England v. Germany for instance, the game would be played with a strong passion and bustling physical contact between opponents, but you will not see too many complaints from the players themselves. Whereas in a local park junior level game, teams will expect the referee to penalize more fouls and to protect players from overzealous challenges for the ball that would be acceptable at the higher skill levels. I suggest that you tell your players that they will need to play harder than they're used to and to expect the same in return from the other team. If you talk to the referee and inform him about the concerns you have about the safety of your players, your information may make the referee decide to work harder at controlling the game. Once you raise an issue like this with the referee, if you and your team then remain calm, the referee may give your team the benefit of the doubt. But if you start complaining, or if your team start misbehaving themselves, then the referee may see you in a different light as the troublemaker, and not the team that you purported to be physical. A good referee will automatically respond by being firm with players if the game is becoming too physical. But it may be that you are being too cautious, and it's you who are overreacting. If this is the case, then your players will have to put up with it and not retaliate. I would suggest, regarding sportsmanship, that you do not approach the referee before the match has started with these concerns or complain about the way the other team plays, as this could be seen as attempting to influence the way that the referee intends to handle the game. Question 5. What is the difference between serious foul play and violent conduct, and why is it that some very violent play is considered serious foul play and others deemed to be violent conduct? Answer 5. Serious foul play covers actions against opponents that are committed as part of the game action and usually involve some attempt to play the ball. For instance, a player who strongly slide tackles an opponent from behind may make some contact with the ball during the tackle, but the strength of the tackle is dangerous to the well-being of the opponent. This is deemed to be serious foul play because it was done against an opponent during play and within a playing situation. Violent conduct is an action outside of the immediate gameplay and is simply when a player aims to inflict damage to another person, such as fighting, thumping, barging, headbutting, etc. This can include fighting with opponents, colleagues, spectators, officials, managers, you name it. Football associations usually impose longer and stronger suspensions for violent conduct, so it is important that the referee distinguishes between the two offenses, serious foul play or violent conduct. Violent conduct happens away from the play action and is committed with no reference to challenging for the ball. If you are not sure what offense to put in your report, seek the advice of a more experienced referee colleague mentor. Question 6. The law says it's a red card to deny an obvious goal-scoring opportunity through a deliberate foul. It is also a sending of offense to deny a goal or an obvious goal-scoring opportunity by deliberately handling the ball. What is the difference between the two offenses? Answer 6. Denying a goal by deliberate handling refers to situations where the ball would enter the goal for a score, but is stopped by a defender other than the goalkeeper using his hands. It also covers situations where the goalkeeper or any other defending player handles the ball outside of their penalty area, thus denying a goal or an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. The farther away from the penalty area and goal, the more difficult it becomes for the referee to be sure that the ball would have gone in for a goal or whether there was an obvious goal-scoring opportunity or not. Denying an obvious goal-scoring opportunity through a deliberate foul is when a defending player and the foul fouls an attacking player moving towards goal prevents the attacking player from a goal-scoring opportunity. To be guilty of denying a goal-scoring opportunity, take the following points into consideration. A. The attacker must be moving towards the goal. B. Only one or zero defenders must be between the attacker and the goal. If there are two or more defenders between the incident and the goal, then this is not an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. See, the ball must be in proximity to the attacking player, who can't play it without much extra effort. D. The attacker has a reasonable shooting opportunity, or a reasonable chance, of moving towards goal without being intercepted by defending players. For example, if an attacking player nearing the outer edge of the defending team's penalty area faints, dribbles past the last fullback, and heads towards goal with only the goalkeeper to beat, then the goalkeeper comes out, the attacker runs past him with the ball, so there's no defending player ahead. If the beaten defender or the beaten goalkeeper grabs the attacker and pulls him down before the attacker can take a shot at goal, then the attacker has been denied an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. If the defending player successfully maneuvers the attacking player so that the attacking player is heading across the field of play away from the goal, and then pulls the attacking player down, this is not deemed as denying the attacking player a goal-scoring opportunity, because the attacking player was not heading directly towards the goal. Any kind of foul can be considered to deny an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. Players can sent off for the indirect free kick offense of impedance if the impedance denies an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. Question 7. If a goal or an obvious goal-scoring opportunity is denied by an illegal method, the law says that the offender must be sent off. If a defender standing in the goal mouth deliberately handles the ball to keep it out, but the ball then rebounds to an attacking player, who then scores before the referee has had a chance to stop play by blowing the whistle, technically the defender had attempted to deny a goal-scoring opportunity. What action should the referee take, and should the defending player be sent off for initially handling the ball in an attempt to prevent a goal being scored? Answer 7. To send the defender off would be deemed excessive. As the goal was eventually scored, the defender did not prevent a goal. The referee should allow the goal to stand and caution the defender for deliberately handling ball. The scoring of the goal and the caution are sufficient punishment. Question 8. Following a cautionable tackle on an opponent, the guilty player immediately starts remonstrating with the referee about the award of the free kick given against his team. The player is making it very clear to the referee that he is very unhappy with the referee's decision. The referee, in an attempt to control this player prior to cautioning him for the foul tackle, strongly warns the player to cease his open criticism. The player ignores this advice and continues to berate the referee. The referee decides that he has had enough of this behavior and sends the player off. The referee tells the player that he is being sent off for a second caution, but the player does not remember having received the first caution, and yellow card had not yet been shown for the initial foul. Whilst leaving the field of play, the player remonstrates with the referee by saying that had he known he was going to be sent off, he would have been more careful and would not have openly confronted the referee. Does the player have a case? Answer 8. The purpose of the cards are to make it abundantly clear to everyone when a caution or sending off has occurred. Nevertheless, although it is always best precise to show cards when disciplining players, the fact that the referee did not show a card does not nullify the offense. Yes? There will be the odd occasions when a referee will inadvertently forget to show a card. After all, referees are only human. In the first instance, the guilty player above was guilty of a cautionable tackle. Secondly, he is also guilty of showing dissent, even after the referee had strongly attempted to calm this player down. Referees will always need to use their man management skills to calm players down after incidents, thus preventing further trouble escalating. In this example, the player clearly commits to cautionable offenses. When cautioning a player, the referee should immediately tell that player that he is being cautioned. This sometimes prevents further trouble and lets the player know that he should not commit a further offense. Nevertheless, the fact the referee did not show the card or tell the player that he was being cautioned for the first offense does not nullify the sending off for a second cautionable offense. In many instances of this nature, players will not let the referee get a word in edgeways after an offense, and no matter what you do as a referee, players will not calm down. The fact was that in this incident, the player committed to actionable offenses, unsporting behavior, and dissent, and should therefore be punished properly. Question 9. After the commencement of the second half, a team forgets to tell the referee, that they have made a substitution during halftime. What action should you, the referee, take? Answer 9. If you go by the law book, then you should stop play as soon as you recognize that a substitution has been made without your permission, and caution the substitute. If play was stopped to allow you to administer the caution, restart with an indirect free kick to the opposition at the place where the ball was when you stopped play. But prevention is far better than the cure. Before the commencement of the second half, always ask both teams if they have made any substitutions during halftime. This prevents unnecessary trouble. Count the players before commencing play. This also reminds players that they should report any substitutions made at halftime to the referee before the start of play. Players do not normally put a substitute on at halftime and then purposefully not tell the referee about it. It is normally innocently done. In this case, you can have a strong word with the guilty player and his manager the next time the ball goes out of play. I am a great believer in educating players when you can, instead of always throwing the book at them. This prevents future problems, educates the players, and builds a much better understanding relationship between the players and the referees. Question 10. If a defending player leaves the field of play without permission and re-enters without permission, can he be sent off for a second cautionable offense? Answer 10. In theory, if a defending player leaves the field of play without the referee's permission, then he could be cautioned. If the same defender then re-enters the field of play without the referee's permission, and after receiving his first caution, then yes, he could be cautioned for a second time, and then sent off. If the defender, A, leaves the field of play, and B, re-enters before the referee has cautioned him for the first offense, then once again, he could in law be sent off for committing two cautionable offenses. The same can be said when a player commits a reckless cautionable tackle and then proceeds to show dissent to the referee. This also could result in two cautionable offenses leading to a sending off. Of course, the referee is responsible for deciding when to caution a player and when not to. In real life, referees rarely caution players for leaving or re-entering the field of play without their permission. Invariably, players who leave the field of play normally do so out of ignorance or to receive treatment for a genuine injury and have just forgotten to tell the referee, or maybe that they do not know the laws covering this. Players rarely leave or enter the field of play to cheat their opponents. A strong word with the perpetrator usually suffices. The referee should use Law 18 common sense before cautioning every time for this offense. So, in short, the answer to the question is yes, but a sending off would be an extreme decision to take. One other solution would be for the referee to just issue one caution, and this is an action that I would possibly consider in such circumstances. Whatever happens, the individual referee makes the decision. It must also be remembered that players are allowed to leave and enter the field of play in certain circumstances, for example, when taking throw-ins or corner kicks, or when running outside of the touchline to run past a defender, or when their momentum takes them outside the field boundaries. This is accepted as part of the game, and players would not be cautioned for this. Question 11. What is the correct procedure when showing a player a card? Answer 11. There is no universal method for showing a player a card. Nevertheless, the main point is not to shove the card up the player's nose. In other words, showing a player a card should be done in an unprovocative and an undemeaning way. This will prevent further trouble for the referee. Once the player's particulars have been obtained, take out the card and raise it upwards and to the side of the player, who should still be standing in front of the referee. Keep the card away from the player's face. Hold the card aloft for 2 or 3 seconds, and turn it several ways, to allow all the people watching to see which color card has been issued. Don't do this in a showy and an arrogant way. Showing the card gives a clear message to all watching. It should not be done to gratify any weird referee pleasure. Referees are prone to what is known as gaze aversion when penalizing players. Body language is an important factor in controlling players. Referees should have the courage to look the player in the eye when delivering the card. This gives a clear message that the referee is punishing that player's bad behavior. Referees should therefore not show any weakness by diverting their eyes when handing out cards. The cards in themselves are not for the benefit of the player being disciplined, because the player already knows that what his punishment is. The referee should have already told him. The cards are for the benefit of everyone else watching, so that they know what type of punishment is being given by the referee. Question 12. Do you always have to caution a player if he commits one of the 7 cautionable offenses? Answer 12. No, if you did, you would not have any players left on the field of play after about 20 minutes. Experienced referees will man-mange players and stop any potential misconduct happening. Other referees will show cards quickly and without warning, and others will completely ignore most of the innocuous challenges and whines. After all, referees are individuals, and no matter how consistent we strive to be or are told to be, it is this individuality which actually adds to the game's excitement. I have always advocated that mistakes made by referees, and more so by the players, are an actual part of the game itself, and they always will be. Take away this flaw, bring in technical aids, more officials, robot referees, etc., and you will kill the game in its tracks. This is not to say that referees should not strive to be as honest and fair as they can be. The nearer you get to perfection, the stronger the reaction when something does go wrong, and the more excitement is generated in the game when it does go wrong, or when a dubious decision is made. Referees will never reach perfection. My motto is, go out and do your best, but do not worry if you upset one or two people during a game. As long as you have given your honest best, you should go home satisfied. In a weird sort of way, when you realize that you have made a mistake, and when it is too late to change your decision, it actually gets the adrenaline going, both in you and the players. It certainly makes you keep on your toes for the rest of the game. Directives from above can also play a role in whether or not cautions should be handed out or not, so listen to the referee administrator when he sets out his objectives for the season. Some referees treat cards as simply a letter of the law issue, rather than as flexible tools for game control. In recent years, the lists of yellow and red card offenses have become longer and more specific. Cautions were originally intended as severe warnings of a potential sending off, but these days cautions are offenses in their own right. The ultimate aim of a referee is not to caution and send off players, but to keep as many players on the field of play as possible, and man-managing players do this before they overstep the misconduct mark. Question 13. During a lofted shot on goal, the goalkeeper, who was off his line, ran back and purposefully hangs on the crossbar, bending the crossbar down with his weight, and the ball which would, or could, have gone in the goal, landed on the top of the goal net. What action should the referee take, and how should he restart the game? Answer 13. It could be very difficult for a referee to decide whether the ball would have entered the goal or not. It could be almost impossible to call with 100% certainty. The referee should caution the goalkeeper for unsporting behavior and award the attacking man a direct free kick to be taken on the goal area line, adjacent to where the ball passed over the crossbar. There is nothing in the laws to cover this act as a denying an obvious goal-scoring opportunity offense. Law 12 mentions specific sending-off offenses for denying goal-scoring opportunities. A. Handling the ball and B. Denying an obvious goal-scoring opportunity to an opponent moving towards the player's goal by an offense punishable by a free kick or penalty kick. These are clearly denying goal-scoring opportunities, but there is no mention of infringements such as bending the crossbar down. Law 12 does not cover this scenario, as this offense is neither A. Handling the ball or B. An offense against an opponent. In my opinion, it cannot, in law, be deemed denying a goal-scoring opportunity even though the action committed may have prevented the ball from entering the goal. The referee is placed in a very difficult position because of the action of the infringing player. It could be very difficult for a referee to decide whether the ball would have entered the goal or not. It could be almost impossible to call with 100% certainty in all cases. The referee should caution the player for unsporting behavior and award the attacking man an indirect free kick. Law 12 allows the referee to award an indirect free kick. In this instance, an indirect free kick is awarded to the opposing team if a player, in the opinion of the referee, commits any other offense not previously mentioned in Law 12, for which play is stopped to caution or dismiss a player. Other options would be to caution the player and restart the game with a dropped ball, a goal kick, or a corner kick, but this gives the advantage to the defender's team, and this is clearly unfair and against the spirit of the game. Question 14. A goalkeeper and an attacking player challenging for a 50-50 ball collide and slide over the goal line into the area beneath the netting and between the goal posts. The ball is stopped on the goal line. The attacking player reaches his leg out and tries to draw the ball back over the goal line. Whilst both these players are still outside of the field of play, the goalkeeper scrambles over top of the attacker in an attempt to grab the ball, pinning the attacking player's legs, preventing him from doing so. Another defender then manages to clear the ball away from the goal. What action should the referee take? Answer 14. The area under the goal net and between the goal posts is not part of the field of play. This is a holding offense committed by the goalkeeper occurring off the field of play. The referee should stop play and caution the goalkeeper for unsporting behavior. The correct restart is a dropped ball on the goal area line adjacent to where the ball was on the goal line when the incident occurred. A penalty kick can only be awarded if the goalkeeper commits a penal, direct free kick offense inside the penalty area. In this instance, the goalkeeper committed the offense off the field of play, therefore, a penalty kick cannot be awarded. Deft as though it may seem, this cannot be a goal-scoring opportunity, because technically the attacking player was not moving towards the goal, and neither was an offense punishable by a free kick or a penalty committed against him, because the offense occurred off the field of play. Question 15. How and when can players drink fluids during a game? Answer 15. Source FIFA. The question of how and when players and referees may drink fluids during the course of a game seems to be the subject of some confusion. We should therefore like to remind you of the following principles. Because the balance of water in the body is essential for health, drinking liquids during a game is not only permitted by FIFA, but actively encouraged. The following rules must, however, be observed so as to avoid disorderliness on the field and injury from missiles being thrown through the air. 1. Liquids may only be drunk during stoppages in play. 2. Drinks must be contained in plastic bottles and handed to the players on the sidelines. 3. It is forbidden to throw bottles or other receptacles onto the field of play. 4. The goalkeeper may keep a plastic bottle in the corner of the goal. 5. Plastic bottles may be placed around the pitch approximately 1 meter away from the sidelines and goal lines, but only as long as they do not obstruct the assistant referees in the course of their duty. Thank you for taking note of the above. Source: J.S. Blatter, FIFA General Secretary. Taken from FIFA Circular 619. Question 16. Law 12 says cautioned and shown the yellow card. Now every referee enacts the shown yellow card bit, but what constitutes cautioned? For example, if a referee chooses not to speak to the player and records only his number, is that referee cautioning him in line with Law 12? There are two duties for the referee here: caution and also show the yellow card. What is caution? Answer 16. The yellow card is not for the benefit of the player, as the referee has already cautioned the player concerned. The yellow card is for the benefit of everybody else watching, to inform them that this player has been cautioned. The caution is the act of the referee warning the player that if he receives a second caution, he will be sent off the field of play. Even by just taking the player's number, the referee is telling that player, by his body language, that he has been cautioned. The yellow card is just confirmation to others watching, and is not the caution itself. Well done, if you have made it this far to the end of the Law 12 Cautions page.